Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Weekly Portland Podcast. This week I caught up with Alain de Botton. He was having a reading at Powell's. I recorded the entire event. The following are highlights from that event. Now in Alain's opening speech, he asks the audience the question, who here is married and is happy? This caused quite a few laughs, and this is where we start.
The thing is, right, this is, you guys are so unusual. In history, because in history, the idea, for most of human history, the idea of loving the person you were with was simply inconceivable. Because you wouldn't love them. You were essentially together with people for dynastic reasons. Your cow went well with their cow. And that's how you got together with people. You didn't get together for feeling. And then suddenly, a new ideology comes about in the early 19th century, towards the end of the 18th century, early 19th century. A new ideology is born, the ideology of romanticism. And romanticism is this new theory dreamt up by some poets and artists, etc., and it is today in your kitchens and in your bathrooms and in your bedrooms. It is the ether, it creates the backdrop of the atmosphere in which we nowadays have relationships. So even if we know nothing about the historical movement, no romanticism, it's kind of there. And that's the weird thing about systems of ideas. They're often there without us knowing that they're there. Romanticism is kind of floating in the ether. We love historically. We love because people guide us to take seriously some feelings at some moments of history that in other moments we would have ignored. There's that lovely quote from the French aphorist La Rochefoucauld. He says, there are some people who would never have fallen in love if they hadn't heard there was such a thing. It's bitter and it's cynical, but he's onto something. It's like we are nudged into certain sorts of love. And at the moment, society is really nudging us big time towards romantic love, romance. Now, what does romanticism mean? What's it all about? Well, one of the things that romanticism tells us is that all of us have got someone waiting for us called a soulmate. And a soulmate is a very special person who will endorse every aspect of you, understand everything about you, and make your life complete. And you may already have met this person, but if you haven't, they're coming. And swiping left and right. And we all have this person. And when you meet this person, you will have an amazing feeling. You call it being in love, you call it in ecstasy, whatever it is, it's a very special, intense feeling. And we're all waiting for that feeling if we haven't had it already. Sometimes we might fake it if we haven't actually felt it, because it's kind of embarrassing to get through life without feeling that special feeling. Maybe there's something wrong with you. So we kind of have a really heavy investment in just looking out for that feeling and having that special feeling. And really, romanticism is very hopeful about other human beings. It basically says, it occurs at a moment in history when, in Europe, religious belief is in decline. And it's sometimes been interpreted as a secularization of many of the hopes that were previously accorded to angels or divine figures. And that's where you can get a hint of it when people go, angel, have you got the house keys? Or angel, what do we have here? This is where we have angels. Because at some level, we are romantics who have secularized angels, taken off their wings, and gone to the bedroom with these people. And it's a distorted way of doing things. So how are we going to find these soulmates? How does romanticism think we're going to find these soulmates? Now, for most of human history, the way that you found your partner was through something called the marriage of reason. And this was when your parents or the tribal elders got together and basically chose you a partner. And most of the time, they chose completely the wrong person, and you were totally miserable, but, you know, that's how it happened. And then romanticism does away with it, and it replaces the mechanism of choosing your partner with what gets called the marriage of feeling. And what that is essentially that the person that you should be together with is the person that you have that special feeling around. And that once you announce that feeling, everyone, parents, society should just be silenced, the waters should part, and on the couple goes to their destiny, because it is a consecrated feeling, a holy feeling, a very special feeling. And so there's a lot in 19th century fiction and poetry about love at first sight and the crush and that instant feeling. It's interesting that romanticism develops in tandem with the development of the railways. And many people have crushes on trains. This is a real trope of Russian fiction, but also English fiction to some extent, and poetry. You're riding on a train, and you just see this kind of delightful person, and maybe you've never really spoken to them, but there's something about where they're turning the pages, when they're reading, or looking out the window, or something. But you get that very quick, instant feeling that they are special. Incidentally, bookstores, great place to have that sort of feeling. we'll have that feeling. But anyway, lots of crushes that occur, and the crush, that special feeling, gets a very strong endorsement by the philosophy of Romanticism. Now, the Romantics also believe that love isn't something for a little while, love is forever. Love is till death do us part, it's, you know, a lifelong commitment. Interestingly, the Romantics are quite interested, fascinated by early death. And romantic fascination with a kind of power couple, they meet, but soon after, someone gets tuberculosis. But in a way, it's kind of all more romantic that they're dying. And suicide, of course, is a quite privileged place as well in romantic ideology. So these are some of the ideas that the Romantics put forward. They're charming, often, they're intense, they're in line with often our best hopes and our greatest moments of enthusiasm. I also want to argue that they are a disaster for our capacity to maintain and sustain long-term relationships, that the ideology of Romanticism has been terrible for our relationships.
After the reading, Alain took questions from the audience, one of whom asked about the concept of the work-life balance and what he thought of that.
I'm going to take you down the path of pessimism. Your question hovers over an area which is quite fashionable in many areas, which is the question of work-life balance, family and work balance. And it's a beautiful idea. It was born in the United States, and it's an idea of pursuing balance. The UK does lots of things really badly, so bad. One of the things it does well is melancholy. Melancholy is an emotion that you feel when you realize that you are dealing with properly incompatible things and a situation which cannot be made completely right. But you're dealing with incompatible. Someone's dying, you can't fix it. You wanted the great job, you didn't get it, etc. It's loss handled with dignity. It's sadness, you know, treated with kind of reverence and with sad music and country walks, etc. And I think that, look, the word sacrifice is important. In having children, you have sacrificed. You've made a sacrifice. The quality of your relationship with your partner will suffer, possibly forever. Literally, I mean, I don't mean it mostly or particularly you, but one suffers irreparable. Something is lost and something is gained. And I think we so live in a society which believes that always every problem has a genuine solution and that there is no loss to be made. Let me take another, you know, something that sometimes comes up is the whole issue of fidelity and, you know, in relationships. Because in a way it's structured a little bit like this too, because people say things like, look, you know, I met somebody and I really like them, but at the same time, like, is it really such a problem to be unfaithful every now and then? Does it really, you know, how can I reconcile these two forces in me, which is the desire for security on the one hand and the desire for excitement and adventure on the other? And we're always looking for a solution to this. And there are endless articles, and nobody mentions polyamory and this and that, and before it was polyamory, it was called free love, etc. And what we're refusing to countenance is really the idea that there is no answer in this area. If by an answer you mean a kind of loss-free solution to it, there's only a level of sacrifice. It's almost like, what variety of suffering would you like? Would you prefer? You know, if you want to have security, that's fantastic. Security is a genuine virtue, a wonderful thing. You can also have boredom. And evenings when you're kind of walking past pals, you can't go in, so you put the kids to bed, you look at the young people, and they all look kind of exciting. And it is. And you're going back to the suburbs, and you won't go there. And you will lead a much more constrained life. And then, you know, other people choose the path of excitement. And it's great to have an exciting life and many partners and lots of change. But that's also going to have a cost. It's going to lead to jealousy. It can really and seriously harm other people around you. And it can be very damaging, especially for children, etc. And let's not beat around the bush. These are some of the prices that we pay for our choices. But rather than thinking that there is no choice, we should weigh up the choices and juggle them and realize that we are dealing with kind of tragic aspects of human nature. And whether it's, you know, work-life balance or, you know, sex fidelity balance, etc., these don't necessarily have an ideal. And I think that's why sad songs exist, and that's why dark evenings exist, and that's why literature exists, because works of literature are places where some of our deepest sorrows find themselves reflected, codified, crystallized in a way which gives us hope, dignity, and makes us feel less alone. And to some extent, I've written a book which has quite sad moments, and I would love you readers to read it in bed. Perhaps your partner's fallen asleep next to you, perhaps you're on your own, and a few tears might at a certain point run down your cheeks, and that's okay, because that's what some of what books do at their most redemptive.
And there you have it for this week. My name is Gregory Day. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Monday. See you then.